From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. With just 3 weeks until the midterm elections, we continue our discussions with the candidates. Today, we talk with the congressional candidates vying to represent Iowa's 2nd District. First, we'll speak with two-term Democratic incumbent Congressman Dave Loebsack, then with his Republican challenger, Marionette Miller-Meeks. Loebsack is accusing Miller-Meeks of flip-flopping her position on privatizing Social Security, while Miller-Meeks says Loebsack changed his position on the Bush tax cuts. Join our discussion with your questions for the candidates this hour. We get started right after this news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And with just 3 weeks until the midterm elections, we continue our discussions today with the candidates. Today, we focus on Iowa's 2nd Congressional District, which covers most of the southeastern corner of the state, including the cities of Ottumwa, Burlington, Muscatine, Cedar Rapids, and Iowa City. It's considered the most Democratic-leaning of Iowa's 5 congressional districts. And in the second half hour, we'll talk with the GOP challenger, Marionette Miller-Meeks. Joining us for the first half hour is two-term Democratic incumbent Congressman Dave Loebsack by phone. Good afternoon to you, Dave Loebsack.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
I'd like you to start out by reflecting on the past 2 years since the last elections and your role in representing the 2nd District in Iowa. What would you say are your biggest achievements?
Well, thank you, Ben. I appreciate the opportunity to be on again. Well, there are three areas that I've been focusing on, especially since 2008 and the great floods of 2008. That's kind of the second big thing. The first one, obviously, is jobs and the economy. And, you know, when I'm home every weekend and get out to all 15 counties, that's really what's uppermost on folks' mind, as you might imagine, especially with the recession being as deep as it is. So jobs, good-paying jobs, my interest is really making things in America again. That has to be the focus, I think, to get people back to work. And I have my own sectors bill that got through, passed unanimously in the House of Representatives, and I'm hopeful it'll get through the Senate. And I know when that happens, the president will sign it. And that is about making things in America again. It's about local communities coming together, the stakeholders in a particular industry coming together to identify their workforce needs and then to make sure that the workforce for that particular industry is trained. And obviously, there's a big emphasis has to be, I think, on small businesses. I voted for a number of pieces of legislation to provide tax cuts and tax incentives for small businesses. They're the drivers of our economy. I think we all know that. And then I mentioned also the floods. That's something I'm particularly proud of as far as my work on the floods in this district since 2008. This district suffered over half the damage of the whole state. And I've worked in a very bipartisan way as a leader of the House delegation with other members of the House of Representatives from Iowa to make sure that we got over $4 billion allocated to the state since 2008. And then I've been doing everything I possibly can to make sure that money gets to those who need that money and those who should be getting that money. And recently we just managed to hammer out an agreement with HUD to make sure that the duplication of benefits issue in Cedar Rapids for small businesses was resolved, and I feel very good about that. And then finally, on the Armed Services Committee, I'm doing a lot with our National Guard, making sure that they're trained properly and they have the equipment they need for their dual missions overseas and at home, and then that we take care of those folks when they come back and do everything we can to treat our veterans with the dignity and the respect they deserve. So those are the three big areas that I'd like to emphasize at the outset.
Are there any areas where you said to yourself, I could have done better for my district?
Well, I'll tell you, I've just been working as hard as I possibly can. As I said, I'm here every weekend in the district. I kind of joke with my friends in Mount Vernon who never see me, and I maintain that I'm home every weekend, and they say they never see me, but that's because I get out into the 15 counties as often as I possibly can. Look, we've got to do better, certainly, on the economy. That's something that has persisted. We could do better, there's no doubt, with respect to getting the money allocated for the flood victims to them, but that's something that we're just going to have to keep pressing forward on.
As a matter of fact, currently the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will not only fund flood protection for the east side of Cedar Rapids, not on the west side, because what property value is not high enough on the west side? Would explain that. And do you support that? Mayor Ron Corbett is appealing to the decision.
That's right. What the Corps does is they have what's called a benefit cost ratio. And if the benefit cost ratio is not at least 1.0, then actually by law it's difficult, if not impossible, for them to recommend to Congress that protection be provided. But last summer, when the leadership in the House of Representatives was attempting to take money away from long-term flood mitigation, a second tranche of money from HUD, about $311 million, I resisted that very, very strongly. We got that money put back in, but in the meantime, I also got a letter in writing from Speaker Pelosi, her commitment to protecting both sides of the river. And my office and I, we've been working very closely with Mayor Corbett, with the local officials as well as state officials, to make sure that whatever the Corps recommends, I will fight as hard as I possibly can to make sure that Congress allocates the money that is needed to protect both sides, if that's in fact what the city decides, and it looks like that's where they're moving.
Exchange listeners, we want to reach out to you. We have Congressman Dave Loebsack with us for this first half hour. His challenger, Marionette Miller Meeks, in the second half hour. We'd like you to tell us what's on your mind. What would you like changed in Washington? And looking back over the last 2 years of congressional action, what do you applaud? What appalls you? 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Now, in 2008, two years ago, you faced the same challenger in Marionette Miller Meeks in that 08 election. Dave Loebsack, you won handily by 18 percentage points. However, that was an election when this rising Democratic star named Obama was riding high. And this time, the Democrats seem to have, according to analysts, an enthusiasm gap, and there seems to be an anti-incumbent attitude out there. How are you running this campaign differently than your last one?
Actually, I'm really not running it any differently. I stand by the work that I've done for Iowa, and it really is about choices. And yes, I have the same opponent. I'm the same person who was running 2 years ago. I've been doing, obviously work on a number of areas, including the three that I mentioned, but also education is something very important to me, to the people of the 2nd District of Iowa. And a lot of what we do, just in terms of helping folks on a day-to-day basis, is really critical. And some of the things that don't even have to do with policy, for example, in Bloomfield, I was able to help save Troy Elevator when they went bankrupt, because we were able to bring together not only a credit union to help them out, but also USDA to make sure that there are loan guarantees available. That's the kind of thing that I work hard on every single day, and that when I'm here in the district, I work hard on. And this really is about moving forward, certainly middle-class families. And also, we have differences in terms of Social Security. I'm going to do everything I can to protect Social Security. I'm never going to privatize Social Security. So some of those things remain the same as the past. But at the same time, I'm just continuing to do my job as best I can. As I said, coming back every weekend and here for district work periods, extended district work periods, listening to what the people of the 2nd District want me to do as their representative.
Congressman Loebsack, as a candidate in 2006, you called for repealing the Bush tax cuts, specifically the cuts for the country's top income earners, individuals earning more than $200,000, couples earning more than $250,000. Now, your challenger, Marionette Miller Meeks, is accusing you of flip-flopping on this issue. When last month you told the Gazette editorial board you were having second thoughts. Why are you now considering supporting continued tax cuts also for the wealthiest 2% of Americans and Iowans?
Well, I think it's important for me as a member of Congress, obviously, to take into account all the arguments, all the facts, everything that is affecting our recovery going forward, as well as our debt and our deficit. Clearly, all these things have to be taken into account. But what I've been very consistent on is extending the Bush tax cuts for the middle class and the small businesses. And look, I was willing to make the compromises that we might have to make to extend those Bush tax cuts for the middle class and for the small businesses out there. these are the folks we need to focus on. But I still am, of course, opposed to the tax cuts for the top 1 to 2%. But going forward, I think it's important that I be open-minded, but I do not prefer, obviously, to extend those tax cuts for the top 1 to 2%. I never have, and that's still my position.
Mm-hmm. When the wealthiest Americans have those tax cuts, you don't think, by the argument that Republicans make, that it will stimulate our economy by giving those people tax cuts that we would hope they would invest in the economy, making jobs?
We have to think about that, but we also have to think about the $700 billion that would cost over the next 10 years that would add to the debt of this country by extending those tax breaks for the top 1 to 2%.
Okay, let's go to our calls, 1-866-780-9100, to talk to Congressman Dave Loebsack, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Deborah is joining us from Mount Pleasant. Good afternoon, Deborah.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Welcome. You have a question.
Yes, I do. Representative Loebsack, good morning.
Hi, Deborah.
I have a question about small businesses. My husband runs a small business, and we know that they need help. They're constantly trying to get credit, and they're thwarted in their attempts. And I just wanted to know if you could tell us what you're doing to give them a break.
Great. Hey, thanks, Deborah. I really appreciate that. A number of things. First of all, I voted for the HIRE Act, and that's something that has been implemented now, and that's helping small businesses to hire folks who are recently unemployed. It provides up to 1 year of a tax holiday as far as the payroll tax is concerned. That's something that actually has put to work a good number of people around the country and certainly in the state of Iowa, and it's helped small businesses as far as their operations are concerned. I voted also to make sure that we have tax credits for small businesses, whether that's a tax credit or whether also, for example, they can engage in accelerated depreciation of equipment. There are a lot of different ways that we can provide incentives that, for small businesses to expand their operations and therefore to hire folks, and I voted in every case for those. Beyond that, I just voted for the most recent bill, which will free up credit, up to $30 billion in credit for small businesses as well. What I hear from small business owners consistently is that it's been very difficult for them to access credit, and you mentioned that yourself, especially from the community banks, and this most recent bill is designed to target community banks and make certain that they're able to free up their credit, their capital, for small businesses. And this is absolutely critical. And, of course, this last bill also was paid for, so there was no additional tax, no additional cost to taxpayers because we have the pay-as-you-go system in the House of Representatives. So there are a number of things that we've done that I voted for with respect to small businesses, and they continue to be my focus. And I really appreciate the question, Deborah.
Okay, thank you, Deborah, from Mount Pleasant, 1-866-780-9100. Healthcare, of course, a big topic over the last 2 years. Your opponent, Congressman Loebsack, is a former president of the Iowa Medical Society, Dr. Marionette Miller Meeks, a former member of two university medical faculties, an eye doctor who has served both in the public and private health care systems. She is strongly opposed to the recent health care reform, a law passed in March 2010 that you supported. Dr. Meeks, Miller Meeks, says she would repeal and replace this law with reforms that actually, in her words, reduce health care costs, increase portability, while increasing accessibility. She says this bill fails to address exploding costs, transfers those unsustainable costs to taxpayers by empowering the government to take over health care. Respond to those charges.
Well, actually, that's not the case at all. I'm very proud of my vote for the health care bill because it does a lot of really wonderful things for a lot of people, including Iowans in the 2nd District. I voted for that bill first and foremost, I guess, because it's going to do, I think it's going to move us very far down the road to making sure that Iowans, that other Americans have the same access to health care options that I have as a member of Congress. I think that's absolutely critical. I want to make sure that everyone has the same options as far as health insurance that I have.
So what aren't people getting about this? Many people, it's not exactly the most popular thing, according to polls. Americans who don't like it or at least skeptical, what are they misunderstanding about the health care reform?
What's happened is that I think that folks have not talked enough about, in my case, certainly in the 2nd District, we have over 400,000 Iowans on health insurance right now who now, as a result of this bill, have more stable and secure health insurance. We have thousands of small business owners who are going to be able to access tax credits up to 35% so that they can provide health insurance to their employees so they can compete more effectively with the larger companies. We have children who have pre-existing conditions who now can have health insurance. We have young adults, as you know, who now up to age 26 can get on their parents' health insurance and stay on their health insurance. Seniors are now receiving a $250 check as we speak when they fall into the donut hole for the Medicare Part D prescription drug plan, and they'll be able to save up to $700 next year. I think a lot of these good things about the health care bill have not come out, and I think that's part of what we're seeing out there in terms of getting the word out to folks about the benefits of this health care bill.
Harry is calling from Burlington in Iowa's 2nd District. Good afternoon, Harry. Welcome to our discussion.
Yes, fine. Thank you. With a recent call-up of a brigade-sized National Guard unit here in Iowa, is putting a lot of stress on the families of these soldiers. And I'm just wondering what Congress is doing and Congressman Loebsack specifically is doing about family stress.
Well, thanks, Harry. I really appreciate that question. That's a great question because we often don't take into account enough, I think, the families when folks deploy overseas. My wife Terry and I, we've had to see off loved ones a few times to Iraq or Afghanistan in recent years, and the families are left behind to do really the hard work when their loved ones go overseas, whether it be Iraq or Afghanistan. There are a number of ways that we can help the families here, and this is something that I've been working on as a member of the Armed Services Committee. We can provide many more resources while their loved ones are away. That's part of what the building of the new readiness centers will do. Those are not the readiness centers, and there's one going up right now in West Burlington, as you may know, soon to be groundbroken for one in Muscatine. We have a new one in Iowa City, soon another one in Cedar Rapids. These are not places just for training for the National Guard when they respond to natural disasters in America, in Iowa, or when they go overseas, but they're also family centers and community centers, and they will be there for the families when their loved ones are overseas. They'll be there for their children as well. We put a lot more resources over the last few years into the families of those who go overseas, and clearly, I think it's important, too, that families are given as much information as possible before their loved ones come home so they can deal with the problems that they're going to be facing, of course, when those loved ones come home. But this is something that's a particular concern to me, again, given my own family situation. And I do the best I can to talk to as many of the families of our National Guard folks as I possibly can on a regular basis.
Harry, thank you for the call.
Yes, appreciate it.
Thanks, Harry.
Harry calling from Burlington. We have about 5 minutes left with Congressman Dave Loebsack, and we'll have a discussion with his challenger. This will be the first election, Congressman Loebsack, in which the newly launched Tea Party movement figures in. As a political science professor, longtime political science professor, tell us what you think is behind it, and then as a candidate, how you are reacting to Tea Party concerns.
Great question. The Tea Party actually represents, I think, a pretty significant part of the American sort of political culture going back to the beginning of our republic. And it's not surprising that they're active out there. I mean, they're concerned about individual freedom. They're concerned about the role of government. They're concerned about a lot of things that Americans traditionally have been concerned about. And I've been able to interact with a number of them over the course of the last couple of years. And I think they have a lot to bring to the table in that sense. There are actually two other folks running in this race, a Libertarian and a Constitutional Party candidate. And those folks, I think, probably are very much akin to many of the Tea Party folks out there. But I certainly understand their concerns. I get their concerns, and I'm willing to do everything I can to respond to their concerns as well.
Anything about the Tea Party movement that worries you?
No, I think that, again, they're reflecting a lot of the concerns that my constituents have out there, and certainly welcome them to the political process.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. John joining us from West Burlington. John, good afternoon.
Good morning, or good afternoon, yes. My question, and hello, Congressman Loebsack.
Hi, John.
The question is with regard to the loss of jobs, not generally, but particularly those that are leaving this country, and what we can do to first stop the hemorrhaging and the loss of these jobs, and maybe, if possible, bring them back. So, I'd like to know how you would address that point.
Great question, John. I think it is, as I said earlier, all about making things in America again. That's how we can deal with, I think, the job loss. But beyond that, we have to make sure we close the tax loopholes for those corporations that take jobs overseas. I have voted consistently to do that. That's part of how we paid for the HIRE Act. That's part of how we paid for the bill recently to save those teacher jobs, those firefighter jobs, those police officer jobs. My opponent said that she would have voted against that bill. I think that's quite unfortunate because closing those tax loopholes is absolutely critical to make sure that we keep those jobs here. And then we have to think of creative ways, like my sector's bill, to do all we can to make things in America again, create new industries, expand existing industries that exist at the moment, and make sure that we get people back to work. I think that's the way to do it.
Okay, John from West Burlington, thank you for that. And we'll go to this email from Gail. Gail writes, she agrees with Bill McKibben and other scientists that the largest long-term but also urgent need is to stop global warming, climate change. Congressman Lobsack, Gail asks, can we increase jobs via efforts to stop global warming?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think that's a really important issue. We've already been doing that here in the state of Iowa, especially when it comes to biofuels and wind energy. And by the way, EPA just in fact made a ruling recently and stated that ethanol is much better for the environment than is traditional gasoline. We've been doing that for quite some time in Iowa. That is, producing ethanol. Biodiesel is very important, too. Last December, I voted to extend the biodiesel tax credit. But because of the dysfunctional Congress, because of the conflict between the houses and in fact, between the parties, that hasn't moved forward. And I think that's really unfortunate. We have over 20,000 jobs in Iowa that are dependent on the biodiesel industry. And then beyond that, the wind industry is obviously important here. You know, we're the second largest state in terms of production of wind energy in the entire country. We have three plants in the 2nd District of Iowa. I think my sector's bill could be really important there, too, because Kirkwood, for example, recently had a suppliers conference, and it's all about bringing not just have the jobs there for those three industries, but make sure we have the supplier industries here to the extent possible, too. Mm-hmm. And these are good-paying jobs that can't be shipped overseas, and I think that's really, really critical.
Congressman Lobsack, you mentioned the dysfunctional Congress. We have about 90 seconds left. The Pew Research Center tells us in a new poll that Americans are offering harsh judgments on Republicans and Democrats in Washington, three-quarters saying partisans have been bickering more than usual, and approval ratings for leaders of both parties in Congress matching all-time lows. What have you done in your 4 years in Congress to cultivate a different political culture?
What I've done is I've acted in a civil and honest way in all of my dealings with all of my colleagues. I have not once gone to the floor of the House of Representatives at night and railed against the other side. I think that's the wrong thing to do. I'm part of what's called a center aisle caucus, and that's members of both parties who get together on a social basis in the hopes that we can bring about some kind of cooperation on policy issues, something obviously that the American people want, that people are telling me they want in the 2nd District. And then beyond that, the bills that I've introduced in many instances, including my sector's bill, have had a lot of bipartisan support, and I continue to do that as much as I possibly can on the Armed Services Committee. That's a very bipartisan committee. Mm-hmm. And also burn JAG funding. That had to do with drug task forces. I led the way to make sure we got that money back in, and that was a bipartisan effort.
Congressman Lobsack, we have to go. Thank you very much for your time, sir. Two-term Democratic incumbent Congressman Dave Lobsack. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
And when we come back, we'll have his challenger, Republican challenger, Marionette Miller Meeks, live on our program. You can call or email with your questions for Marionette Miller Meeks, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Back with more of The Exchange in just a few minutes. This is Iowa Public Radio News. We're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Great to have you with us over the noon hour. Tomorrow on this program, we talk with 2010 World Food Prize laureates David Beckman of Bread for the World and Joe Luck of Heifer International. The two are in Iowa this week for the World Food Prize Borlaug Dialogue and Symposium. We'll talk about how they've built two of the world's foremost grassroots organizations aimed at ending hunger and poverty for millions of people around the globe. That tomorrow on our program. Today, with just 3 weeks until the midterm elections, we continue with our discussions with candidates. Today, we're focusing on Iowa's 2nd Congressional District, covering most of the southeastern corner of the state, including Burlington, Ottumwa, Muscatine, Iowa City, and Cedar Rapids. In the first half hour, if you were with us, you heard two-term Democratic incumbent Congressman Dave Loebsack. Now we're joined by the GOP challenger, Dr. Marionette Miller-Meeks. Welcome to our program.
Good afternoon, Ben. How are you?
I am great. Thank you very much for coming into our studio. You are a former president of the Iowa Medical Society, back up 24 years in the U.S. Army and Army Reserve, retired lieutenant colonel from the reserves, former member of two university medical faculties, an eye doctor who has served both in the public and private health care systems. You have a practice in Ottumwa. You strongly opposed the recent health care reform law passed in March of 2010. Tell us why.
Well, I think when you look at my background, so not only am I a physician, but I started out actually in nursing and did student nursing and volunteer work. I currently volunteer at the Free Medical Clinic in Cedar Rapids. So when you come from a background of volunteering, nursing, both in the private sector, in the public sector, in the military, and then my background as a physician in work, some people in the healthcare field don't understand the entire economics of healthcare and why healthcare costs as much as it does. So if your impression is that healthcare costs are high because doctors charge too much money, as we heard some of that rhetoric last year about what physicians were doing, and they'd rather prescribe a tonsillectomy than prescribe antibiotics, when you listen to that, some of that rhetoric, or you think that healthcare costs are high because insurance companies just don't want to pay out in benefits, then you set up a healthcare bill as was done and passed in March of this year. However, you don't need a 2,400-page healthcare bill to address what many of us see are inequities and discrepancies in healthcare and how to get better medical care out to individuals and to people.
So do you support some of the aspects of this healthcare bill?
Yeah. As I've always said when you mentioned earlier that I wanted to repeal the bill and reform it, there are aspects of the bill that I think are very good, which is why
why repeal the whole bill then?
Well, when you look at the public in general, the American public, there was a pluralistic majority of people who did not agree with the health care bill. They were very incensed that their congresspeople had not read the bill. There's stuff written in the bill that, in fact, will hurt job creation and the economy, such as one of the things very obvious, and that is the 1099 provision that's in the bill. But again, 112 new agencies that are going to be dispensing and regulating health care. Does that mean that we'll actually have health care dollars that get down to the individual patient or the consumer of healthcare? Who's going to decide what level of benefits? Is it a nameless, faceless bureaucrat in Washington, D.C., or do you and your family get to decide what menu of benefits you want? For instance, the two of us are wearing glasses. So for us to have vision coverage or dollars in our healthcare account for vision coverage would be important. But for other people, they may not want vision coverage, but they're going to pay for that within their taxes.
Your questions and comments for Marionette Miller-Meeks, who is challenging two-term Democratic and Congressman Dave Loebsack, 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. An email from, I have to scroll up because I'm getting quite a number of emails here for you, Dr. Miller-Meeks. An email from Jill: my niece just got health insurance for the first time since she got off her parents' plan. If you repeal the health care law, there would not be another one immediately in place. Plus, it sounds as if you want the private sector to still be in charge. Why wouldn't you leave the law in place? You answered that, but she's speaking specifically to the covering pre-existing conditions and worrying about that not having.
The pre-existing conditions is an area in which I actually am in agreement with the healthcare bill. So how do we treat pre-existing conditions? So regulation of the insurance industry I do think is important, allowing adult children to stay on their parents' policy. The insurance industry had actually given that to Congress and to the administration in 2008. And there you can read Mort Kondracki on Roll Call had actually brought this up, that it was offered to all of Congress and Washington in December of 2008. So, you know, having adult children on their parents' policy I don't think is a big cost to the insurance companies. You know, insurance companies dropping people when they're ill or when they've had they've had an illness, and then the premiums are jacked up. All of those things could have been addressed in a different fashion and with some regulation in the insurance industry that I do think is important.
How do you feel your party, the GOP, handled the health care debate that went on for almost 2 years, a year and a half for sure? Could it have been more effective, the GOP?
I think it could have been more effective on both parties' part. I watched the proceedings on C-SPAN. I watched excellent viewpoints brought up by the Republicans, none of which were allowed out of committee. We saw Senator Grassley working with six senators, he being one of the six, with Senator Baucus to try to fashion and craft a bipartisan health care bill. And I think when you try to shut out one party and not allow ideas from both parties to move forward, I mean, there was concern brought up that if this bill passed, that insurance premiums would go up immediately. And in fact, they have. Right now, we're seeing all of these waivers come through and have been granted by the administration. And now there's a whole big backlog of people wanting waivers from the impact of the health insurance bill that was just passed.
Okay, in 2008, let's move on to another aspect of your campaign. In 2008, you favored allowing some parts of the Social Security to be privatized. Now you're opposed to that. What has changed in that time?
I think what's changed in 2008. And I have never been in favor of privatizing all Social Security, and have said repeatedly in public forums all across the state, even since 2008, that people have a contract with their government. Seniors paid into Social Security, they paid into Medicare, with the understanding that they would have a certain level of benefits when they got to age 65. That contract with seniors was broken when Lyndon Baines Johnson decided to open up the Social Security Trust Fund and allow those funds paid into as premiums to be used in the general expenditures. So I don't think anybody is talking about doing anything to disrupt benefits to seniors currently, and that scare politics. So, but in 2008, what we were told was that the data and information was that Social Security would not pay more out in benefits than it received in premiums until 2017. Well, this year it was announced that there's been more is going out in benefits than they're receiving in premiums. So now we know that the shortfall is even greater than what we anticipated. And we have 77 million baby boomer retirees by year 2020. So we know that we have to do something with the Social Security system, but maintain the current level of benefits for seniors.
1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org to have your question put to Dr. Marionette Miller-Meeks, who is challenging Congressman Dave Lobsack in Iowa's 2nd District. Let's go to Anthony in Iowa City in the 2nd District. Good afternoon, Anthony.
Hey, how are you guys? I had a question for Dr. Meeks, and that was Mr. Lobsack seems to be touting his flood assistance and flood recovery efforts. So the question is two parts for Dr. Meeks. Dr. Meeks, do you think that, from the floods of 2008, the recovery that eastern Iowa has seen from the federal government and FEMA, that all of that recovery would have happened regardless if there was a Democrat or Republican in our congressional seat? And the second part of the question is what would you have done differently, post-flood situation for the district?
Anthony, thank you for those that two-part question. Let's get an answer, a response.
Thank you, Anthony. And that's a fascinating question because I've never actually thought about would the response have been different regardless of the political affiliation of the person who was in office at the time. And I would have to say I would say no. Because one of the main functions of our Constitution and the federal government is, in fact, to respond to things like natural disasters. To me, that's a very important role and function of the federal government, that they step in into that role when these kinds of things occur. We know that from the post-flood data and information that the state had prepared, that there was $8 billion in damage during the flood, and almost all of that came here in the 2nd District. A lot of what's gone on in flood recovery has been because Iowans and the citizens of the 2nd District are just phenomenal people, and they have come together in communities, in for-profit groups, not-for-profit groups, religious groups, in great concert and in great collaboration to help restore and make people whole. But it's not just the role of the congressperson to get money back into the district. I think certainly that could have been done in a much more aggressive fashion, much more integration of services, but also then to see that those monies are going forward. We already know that there are small businesses in Cedar Rapids that are having tremendous difficulties. They're having difficulties in accessing resources and accessing money. And the strings attached to the money that they have has made it very difficult for them. Some of these businesses have already left the Cedar Rapids area, and more are leaving in other areas as well, too.
Okay. Anthony in Iowa City, thank you for that question. And we want to talk a little bit about the Bush tax cuts. That's also a campaign issue here. Dr. Marionette Miller-Meeks, you support extending the Bush tax cuts across the board, as I understand, also for the country's top income earners, individuals earning more than $200,000, couples earning more than $250,000. Now, the fact that these would be, if these were extended to the top earners as well, that would cost the federal treasury an estimated $700 billion over 10 years. So with these huge budget deficits, can we really afford that $700 billion on tax cuts for wealthy over the next 10 years?
Well, first of all, for those that make over $200,000 to $250,000 a year, it's been estimated by the CBO and other organizations that, and I have to recheck on the CBO, but I've seen it reported that 900,000 of them are small business owners. So the question I would have, small business owners who do their taxes as an S corporation, all of the profits in their business go to their individual income tax return. Typically, those small business owners plow their income, if you will, any profits from their business, back into their business to grow their business. Do we really want to tax them? Do we really want them to pay more in income tax so that then they have less to invest in their business or to keep their business solvent during an economic recession? And I would say the answer to that is no. We want to do everything we can to help the small business owner continue to be profitable, continue to be able to add employees, or stay in business in a downturn. The next thing is that we continue to try to divide people up into different groups and different classes. Even those people that make over $200,000 or $250,000 that are not a small business owner, so they're not filing their taxes as an S corporation, those individuals, if they put money into the stock market or into the bond market or even municipal bonds like here in our city to build schools, that money is being reinvested back into job creation, back into the community. So if you buy a stock, in essence, you're putting money into that business so that business can continue to be solvent or can grow or can hire more people. So in my mind, we should extend the Bush tax cuts because we want to have job creation. We want to help people. And remember, this was something that our congressman said that would be irresponsible not to extend the Bush tax cuts just 2 months ago and not to have done it before the recess. So here we are. If you make under $30,000 a year and you're a mother with two children, you're going to be paying almost $1,000 more in taxes because the Bush tax cuts were not extended. And companies and businesses—
But we have to say Dave Loebsack is not in favor of that. He's in favor of extending the tax cuts for those in the lower and the middle income, right?
Regardless, nothing was done on this. They've known the Bush tax cuts were going to expire at the end of 2010, ever since he was elected into office. So we could have addressed this issue anytime over the past 4 years, and we've not done so. So now, businesses have to start doing their W-2 forms. They have to start allocating for taxation in November. This is going to come back in the lame duck. So we know for January or February, people are going to see less money in their paycheck. That's going to hurt all of us.
Okay, so you're complaining about the inaction of Congress as a whole in that criticism, it seems. Don in Iowa City, good afternoon. Welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you for taking my call. Ms. Meeks, I don't understand how after nearly 10 years of tax cuts, the economy is in such bad shape. And also what I don't understand is how anybody can credibly talk about the economy without bringing up the fact that this horrific fiasco in Iraq and the mismanagement in Afghanistan were funded by tax cuts, borrowed money.
Okay, Don, let's get a response.
Well, Don, there's several things there, so I'm going to try to answer them in the best way I can. If you look up tax revenue government website that shows the amount of revenue going into the federal treasury, you'll see that after the tax cuts of 03, which went into effect in 04, the amount of revenue that went into the Treasury vast exceeded their predictions. And I remember reading in 2005 and 2006 that Peter Orszag, who at the time was the chair of the Congressional Budget Office and who is now in the Office of Management and Budget in the White House, stated at that time that he was surprised that the amount of money coming into the Treasury was far in excess of what they had predicted it would be. So the tax cuts actually brought in more revenue into the Treasury than was thought by the CBO chair at that time, who was Peter Orszag. So that's one issue. However, I don't disagree with you that spending dramatically increased during that point in time, and the wars were not funded by tax cuts. The wars weren't funded. That was deficit spending. So I would agree with you that you cannot embark upon a tax cut mission and increase spending and a war all at the same time. I think Lyndon Baines Johnson did the same thing, and I am critical of the Bush administration just as I would have been critical of the Johnson administration at that time. I don't think that you do all of those things. It is not responsible in that manner, and you're correct in that. So there are many conservatives such as myself who were very critical of the Bush administration expanding government and expanding spending, and were hoping that he would veto a highway bill, that he would veto a bill that was laden with earmarks regardless of what party those earmarks came from. And so I think that there is criticism that can be laid at the feet of both parties.
Don in Iowa City, thank you for that question. We have this email from Molly, a pointed email from Molly for Dr. Miller Meeks. How much will you profit personally if the Bush tax cuts for the wealthiest 2% of Americans are renewed as you call for?
Zero, Molly. I would not profit at all from the extension of the Bush tax cuts.
You do not fall in that category of the wealthiest 2% of Americans?
Nope. I'm so sorry to disappoint you, but I don't fall into that category.
Okay, let's go to West Des Moines. Jim, good afternoon. Welcome to The Exchange. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Yeah, go ahead. Welcome to our program. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a small business owner in West Des Moines area, and we've been in business for a number of years. We're an S Corp. We take a small salary. We have a good staff. We provide full benefits for all our employees and have for the past number of years in health, dental. And my question is, you know, when you were talking about in the healthcare where bureaucrats control the healthcare end of it under the Obamacare or healthcare, whatever you want to call it, that I don't think that's the case, especially, you know, taking that there's been like a 20% increase this year. Well, we've experienced 20% increases over the last number of years, so this year really is no different. I don't see that the healthcare has had an impact on that, and I still think that it's more being controlled by the healthcare industry, the insurance industry, than it is by the legislation. I'd like your comment on that.
Well, I'm not sure what your question was, but I'll try to answer it. I think healthcare costs too much in the United States. And I think that healthcare reform was important and especially important in controlling costs. So again, how you address that issue depends upon what your viewpoint is and your understanding of why healthcare costs have gone up and why they're going up. One of the things that the bill does not address is utilization or overutilization. And so when you have a package of benefits and you tell people that they have no cost to this package of benefits other than they're paying into their individual or their employer-based health insurance program, people access more benefits than they would do if they were doing it out of an individual healthcare account, even if that account was still pre-funded by taxpayer money. So there are many avenues that we had available to us in order to have more control over the health insurance industry. Remember, as a physician, I'm not necessarily a fan of a health insurance industry. I have no PAC money from the health insurance industry. My viewpoint is not based upon some quid pro quo or some benefit to me. I've had to deal with health insurance companies, to fight with them to get coverage for my patients, to have pre-existing conditions removed that were not pre-existing conditions, and have always been an advocate for my patients in that avenue. And I do not disagree with you that healthcare costs have gone up. I do disagree that this bill is going to address that and make healthcare more affordable. I think, in fact, the opposite is true.
Jim in West Des Moines, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
And we've got just a few minutes left. We can squeeze in another call. Henry in Muscatine. Good afternoon, Henry.
Good afternoon. I have a question for Dr. Meeks. It's about jobs. You've criticized Congressman Lobsack's vote against the bill that would raise taxes for firms that export jobs. You spoken against the some of the stimulus bills, including the highway bill. So my question is outside of the traditional idea of cutting taxes, what particular plan do you have for bringing back jobs to Iowa in the 2nd District, and what type of jobs do you think would be created by that plan?
Okay, Henry, thank you very much. We're running out of time, and we'll let Dr. Miller Meeks also tell us why she should be elected in that final answer as well.
Well, Henry, I think what I've been critical of is a stimulus bill that sent money places and didn't create jobs. So, for instance, if you go to recovery.gov, you'll find that there was over $1.5 million and created 3 jobs in Muscatine, according to their website. That means that you could have given individuals this $50,000 or $100,000, and you would have had more of an impact on creating jobs in the economy. But research and development credits would really help small businesses, and I can list off a number of those that would benefit from research and development credits that could have been done. You could have had a payroll tax cut in 2008 or even now in 2008, and that would help both the supply and demand. It would help the lowest income people and would help the small business owner. So I think the reason why I'm running for Congress and why I should be elected is because I have the substance to be able to deal with a variety of issues, both on economics, on health care, on energy, energy efficiency, job creation, the military, and because I have a life of service and service to individuals and to people. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Ben.
Dr. Marionette Miller Meeks, thank you so much for coming into our studio. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Mitchell Schmidt. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows, Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio available at iowapublicradio.org. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.